Hello, everyone. For those of you who are coming for the service today, as Dojun said earlier, we just finished up a beginner's mind retreat, 3 days of spending time together, exploring Zen practice through the lens of retreat practice, through the forms of retreat practice here at Great Vow. It's been a varied group with ages ranging from 20 to 70 plus, different stages of life, parents and children, people with careers, people who are living here. What do we all have in common? Curious about this Zen practice, courageous to show up. Some of us really want some relief from suffering. Some of us long to know, to really experience this life to its fullest, unfiltered. Some of us wish to feel connected or to contribute. What do we have in common? Our humanness. So beginner's mind is a term that you hear in Zen. What is it? One definition is a state of openness and wonder that allows a person to approach life free from preconceived ideas, biases and habits. Beginner's mind is a natural state. It gets covered up, gets covered over by these fixed views about how things are and how they should be and how we should be. And it dulls the experience of life. Beginner's mind, a state of openness and wonder that allows a person to approach life free of preconceptions, biases, and habits. This is something we have all experienced. What was it for you? A time in your life when you became absorbed by the beauty of nature and saw it anew? An art project that you were involved with? Movement of the body in sports or in dance. For me, there was a time when I was traveling, when I was younger, and I found myself sitting on a rock looking out over the Aegean Sea, and there was no other place in the world that I wanted to be. It was a beautiful day, and the light was sparkling on the water. I'd looked at the ocean many times before, but something about that moment, it all came together and it was entrancing. I saw it through different eyes and I saw it with a different mind, and my mind stopped and I just was there. Then I came back online. But that was the first time I realized that there didn't always need to be a constant dialogue in the mind. It was an extraordinary experience and also a completely ordinary experience. Egoic mind tends to play down these moments because it's not something that you thought about or you were working for. And with time, I forgot. I forgot that happened. Until I came to practice and I recognized that quiet mind again. I remembered it and I realized that it was something that could be cultivated and lived, not just a moment that happens every once in a while. Beginner's mind is an acknowledgement Beginner's mind is the lived experience that each moment is new. It's a willingness to accept what comes forward, appreciating the impermanence of it, the flow of it. It's a courageousness to be one with this flow of life. So we all came together this weekend to explore life, to explore our life with this beginner's mind, to see ourselves directly and to touch this truth of life directly. It can be said that the essence of Zen practice is to respond appropriately with your whole being to whatever life brings you in the moment. Notice what this is not saying. It's not saying that the essence of Zen practice is to sit with perfect posture and perfect concentration in the meditation hall. The essence of Zen practice is to respond with wisdom and compassion wholeheartedly to whatever life brings you in each moment. This morning, for example, we thought we were going to have a closing circle, and then we found out that there had been a COVID exposure, and that changed. We thought that the retreat would end one way, and it's ending another way. The essence of Zen practice is to respond to that without a story, without thinking about resentment or feeling that it didn't go the way you wanted, but simply to respond. Meditation practice helps to clear away the hindrances that get in our way. It helps to clarify the mind so that we're able to respond with wisdom and compassion wholeheartedly, so that we can give the gift of this clarity and attention to our world, to others, to ourselves. Concentration practices calm the mind. Another word for concentration practice is calm abiding. Touching into and resting in that quiet mind allows space for insights to come up, to arise into the true nature of this life, into the true nature of us. And ultimately, our practice allows this understanding to be incorporated, to become our very being, and then expressed and lived in our lives. So, what did we practice during Beginner's Mind Retreat? What did we touch on? What do we emphasize? How does our practice in the meditation hall in these 3 short days that we're together incline the hearts and the mind toward embodying this wisdom and this compassion? We practice mindfulness. In her book, Chosen Roshi defines mindfulness as deliberately paying full attention to what's happening around you and within you, in your body, your heart, and your mind. Mindfulness is awareness without criticism or judgment. So we practice mindfulness. We practice coming back to that direct experience of breath or sound while seated, while standing, while walking. We bring intention and mindfulness to work, to chanting, to meals, over and over in the time we're together. And we cultivate a sense of curiosity, curiosity about this life, curiosity about what's happening, encouraging a willingness to really look, to investigate our practice and our life. Miyoshu, in one of her comments, said that Zen practice was like we're scientists and these are scientific experiments. I find that entertaining. I like to think of it that way too. What's helpful? What leads to happiness? What's wholesome? If I try it, how will I feel at the end of the meditation period or at the end of the day? Was that helpful? What habits, what patterns are unwholesome? What actions, what thoughts lead to suffering? Insight arises, try it out. How'd it work? Was that true? Was it true for you, for me? And this takes effort, diligence, energy. During the retreat, this is built into the schedule. There's a schedule, we follow it, we have to keep showing up. It helps to push us a little bit, helps us be diligent, even sometimes when we don't feel like it. And it can seem unrelenting. Did you notice the sign on the refrigerator in the guest area? Persist. We come back again and again, persevering, persisting, rousing effort, and beginning again. This diligence, this persistence, or using just the right amount of effort is a skill. We can investigate it. We can be mindful about this diligence that's required, this effort. And it's something that we can cultivate. There's a story from the Buddha's life that resonates particularly with me on this topic. It's from a record of the Buddha's teaching that was recorded in the Pali Canon. And it often comes to mind when I'm thinking about this. So it's very short and I'll read it for you. On one occasion, when the Blessed One was staying on Vulture Peak Mountain, a monk named Sona was staying near Rajagara and meditating in seclusion. And although Sona meditated diligently, with effort, he was frustrated by his lack of spiritual progress. So we went to the Buddha and he asked him why he was not successful in practice. The Buddha listened to the monk and said, "Tell me, Sona, in earlier days, when you were a house dweller, were you not skilled in playing the stringed music of the lute?" Maybe it really wasn't a lute. Maybe that's a translation. Some more obscure Indian instrument, probably. "Yes, master," replied Sona. "And tell me, when the strings of the lute were too tight, taut, was then your lute tuneful and easy to play?" "Certainly not." "And when the strings of the lute were too loose, was your lute tuneful and easily playable?" "Certainly not, master." "And when, Sona, the strings of your lute were neither too taut nor too loose and adjusted to an even pitch, did your lute then have a wonderful sound, and was it easily playable?" "Yes, certainly, master." "Similarly, Sona, if energy is applied too strongly, it will lead to tension. And if energy is too slack, it will lead to laziness. Therefore, you should determine the right pitch for your persistence. Attune the pitch of the faculty of senses, and in this way, focus your attention." What is the least amount of energy you need to keep the body in a stable seated posture? What's the right amount of energy to bring to the experience that's before you. Working with effort and energy, learning how little and how much to apply, not relaxing into daydreams or spinning off into anxiety and self-criticism is a skill. And with mindfulness and with intention, we can investigation, right? We can begin to learn for ourselves how to manage that. What is the right pitch to remain mindful of your hands during work practice, not becoming so absorbed that you accomplish nothing, but not so lost in thought that you're working mechanically and missing the moment? What else do we emphasize in this beginner's mind retreat? Joy has been on my mind recently. Some of you know that my mother died last month after 3 months decline where I cared for her. This coincided with parinirvana, or the commemoration of the Buddha's death. So at the temple in Portland where I practice, we spent the last month really looking into death and talking about death, listening to Dharma talks. It was an opportunity to really face this aspect of our lives. And surprisingly, through looking at death, through looking directly at it, contemplating it, experiencing my own mother's death, joy started to bubble up. That was not what I expected. And it piqued my curiosity. What did the Buddha say about joy? Many of us come to Buddhism for relief from suffering. That's certainly what got me in the door of the Portland Temple. So I'd like to share with you a little bit about the story of the Buddha's enlightenment and what he discovered, what he tells us about happiness there. So in his early life, he lived a life of luxury. Every desire was met. He was safe. He had this beautiful, luxurious environment, delicious food to eat, and a beautiful wife. And yet, he was unsatisfied. The material aspect of desire didn't satisfy him. He suffered, and he wondered, why do other people suffer? So he left this environment to find out for himself, to practice. And he spent 6 years ardently practicing. He worked with 2 different teachers. And this is what he said upon leaving his teachers, that their teaching did not lead to dispassion. It didn't lead to this stopping, this constant wanting, to the fading of lust or desire, to the cessation, to this dropping away. It didn't lead to peace or to direct knowledge or enlightenment. So then he went to practice on his own, and he began a process where, since meeting the desires hadn't worked, what if he deprived himself of everything? So he did breathing practices where he inhibited the flow of air. He minimized food until he became very thin, almost to the point of death. Again, he says, this does not lead to dispassion, to the fading of lust, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge or enlightenment. And he wondered, might there be another way? Look what happened here. He was mindful, He was mindful of what was happening in his body, and he was inquiring, this is working, this isn't working, is this leading toward where, toward peace, toward direct knowledge? And it wasn't. And then he had an insight, might there be another way? Mindfulness, investigation, diligence. So here, I'll read just a couple paragraphs about his insight. I thought of a time when my Sakyan father was working and I was sitting in the cool shade of a rose apple tree, quite secluded from sensual desire and from unwholesome things. I had entered upon the first abode in the first meditation. So now he's sitting, determined to become, to figure this out, to understand, to break through. I had entered upon the abode in the first meditation, which is accompanied by thinking and exploring with happiness and pleasure born of seclusion. I thought, might this be the way to enlightenment? And then following up that memory, there came the recognition that this was the way to enlightenment. Why am I afraid of such pleasure? It is pleasure that has nothing to do with sensual desire and unwholesome things. And then I thought, I'm not afraid of such pleasure, for it has nothing to do with sensual desire and unwholesome things. This is where he starts to contemplate this middle way. It includes and honors the arising of happiness and joy, this wholesome kind of happiness, not based on desire, but a happiness that arises from experiences in spiritual life. One of the things we did during the retreat was had a sharing circle where we got together and shared our experiences. And in one of the circles, one of the participants shared this joy that had arisen when they looked around the room and they realized this is a group of strangers and I feel love for everyone here. That is just simple joy arising. It's not, it's to be felt and enjoyed. It's wholesome. Somehow the egoic mind tends to want to pass over this joy and dismiss it. It's not as important as my suffering and my pain. And yet there is this joy. It does arise, and it's something that we can cultivate. We can become familiar with what are the body sensations that happen when you feel this happiness and joy, this spiritual kind of happiness. Sometimes I feel like a softening in the eyes, a tingling in the body. As I've started to investigate this and become more familiar with it, I notice it more. Like the other day, it was just like a flash. It was like, whoa, a body sensation. And I realized, oh, that was a joy flash. And then gone. It's like, oh, I see it. There it is. So we can become familiar with it and then begin to recognize it. What we pay attention to grows. Have you noticed how the words joy and ease are sprinkled throughout the chants and the enlightenment poems that we chant during service, before meals and at work practice? Woven into the fabric of the beginner's mind retreat is the suggestion of joy and ease. So how do we practice in the beginner's mind retreat? So far I've mentioned mindfulness. We practice investigation. We can look into diligence and effort and bringing joy into practice. And then there's concentration. Mindfulness, experiencing and investigating the breath and the sound, returning to the object of meditation over and over again, all of these build concentration. In the practice group, someone was saying how they just felt like they didn't have enough concentration. Their mind was everywhere. Part of me thinks, well, welcome to the human race. But part of me thinks, you know, would you expect to be a couch potato and then get up the next day and run a marathon? I mean, we recognize that it takes training to change the physical body, and it's the same with concentration. It can build, but it builds incrementally. Mindfulness, investigation, diligence, joy, concentration. Perhaps some of you might recognize this list of words. Might sound familiar to you. If we add in tranquility and equanimity, we have the seven factors of awakening. This is a foundational teaching of the Buddha. Last month, as I was immersed in death, I read the Parinirvana Sutta, which is a sutra in the Pali Canon which describes the end days of the Buddha. And at the end of his life, he spoke of the teachings that he felt were important. That caught my attention. Here's a man who taught for 40 years, and what he thought was important at the end of his years of practice has some weight to it. And one of the things he mentioned was these seven factors of, I want to say enlightenment, but it's awakening. So they are mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, concentration, tranquility, and equanimity. A side note here, notice where concentration comes in. It's fifth. It's not the first. I found this heartening, actually. These characteristics, they're something that you can develop, but they all are also an expression of what an awakened person is like, characteristics of an awakened person. But they are cumulative and sequential. One flows out of the previous one. So I found this comforting when I discovered, oh, look, there's four other practices that I can develop that end with increased concentration. That was, it was a joy. And what a joy to notice that the teachings of the beginner's mind retreat are consistent with the Buddha's teachings on cultivating qualities which incline us toward awakening. This is the wholesome joy of spiritual insight. In a few hours, many of us will leave, will return home, back to family and friends, jobs and responsibilities, or for residents settling back into the routines of the monastery. And what do we carry forward? What do we carry with us? My wish for all of you is that you take home the treasure of the three jewels. Buddha nature, the Buddha within, that we have the capacity to become awakened, each of us. You know, I heard in the little informal closing circle, many of you had very positive experiences with this retreat, experiences of joy and insight. And the fact that that happened shows that these practices open us in a way that we are capable of this. Buddha, Dharma, there are these teachings. They are here for us. We learn them when we come to places like this, the temple in Portland. We can apply them in our lives. They are so wholesome and they so lean towards happiness and insight and realization. And we have access to them. And Sangha, spiritual friendship, to carry this practice forward with other people. There's the temple in Portland, there's the Zoom world, there's retreat here. But it's so helpful to acknowledge that we're all in this together. So this triple jewel of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, I wish that you take that home with you and appreciate that. May your lives go well.